So once again, last time we discussed the Malchus of Alexander the Great, and his process of conquering the world. And Alexander was busy being Ma'asiv Chochma, as we showed from the Gemara, that in one hand we see that Alexander was looking for Chochma. And in his process of looking for Chochma, he came to the Eden to ask them all kinds of philosophical questions. The Gemara talks about how he went to Africa and met up with people that challenged him in Chochma, and he was more or less put into his place. And it could very well be that all this came about because Alexander once again was exposed to Aristotle, was exposed to Greek culture, and he was influenced definitely from Greek culture, but included in that was the fact that he was exposed to Chochma, so to say, and therefore he was always searching and always looking for different Eifanim, different people to be able to expose to him, to explain to him what's going on in the world. And as we mentioned, when he came to Eretz Yisrael, he met up with Shimon HaTzadik. And this was also a tremendous eye-opener for him, because he saw Shimon HaTzadik in the Cholom, and he realized that he realized many things. He realized the Kayach of a Chalom, according to the lessons that he had learned from Aristotle, that everything is Beteva and there's nothing Lamalam in Ateva. So then how could it be that this person that appeared to him before he went into Eretz Yisrael all of a sudden is a real person? It's not just a dream, but this is a real person. There's something going on over here beyond the Teva. And also he got to realize that in his conquering of the world, somehow it involved Shimon HaTzadik, or perhaps better to say it involved the Eden, Shimon HaTzadik representing the Eden. So he also understood that Min HaShemayim, they're telling him that it's not just his gvura and it's not just his chokhmah as a soldier, but he had a level of siyata d'shmaya that came about because of Klal Yisrael. All this comes out of seeing Shimon HaTzadik in the Chaloyim, Shimon HaTzadik telling him that he would succeed. So Alexander the Great goes through many, many different libudim that he picks up on his travels. As we explained, meeting up with Shimon HaTzadik, that itself, without a doubt, is an eye-opener. There is a story that is told, it's a tradition, we don't know if it's true or not true, it's hard to prove if it's true, that ultimately Aristotle was chayzer b'tshuva. Aristotle gave up all of his beliefs, and he went over to the Emes Emuna through the influence of Shimon HaTzadik. And we showed this yesterday in the Yavetz, the way the Yavetz goes to explain the Gemara, the Hagor and the Yavetz to explain the Gemara. But we're not positive it's true. But we can understand where this if it's not true and it's just a folklore, we can understand where it comes from. Because Shimon HaTzadik, as you mentioned, goes down in our history with the title of Tzadik. And he goes down in our history as being the most outstanding person that was found in the beginning of the Tkufa of the second Beis Hamikdash. So, without a doubt, he could have had a tremendous influence both on Aristotle and on Alexander the Great. The Gemara in Yuma, Daf Lamed Tes Amud Aleph, tells us that for 40 years, Shimon HaTzadik served as a Kohen Gadol in this time of the second Beis Hamikdash. And for those 40 years, there were things that took place in the Beis Hamikdash which were reminiscent to what took place in the first Beis Hamikdash. Hayagayrel Oile B'yamin, when the Gayrel of the Sar Lazozel always came up on the right side. Afterwards, sometimes on the right, sometimes on the left. The Gemara says, Hayaloshin Shal Zahiris Malbin, when they used to, by the Sar Lazozel, after they sent down the Sar Lazozel, so the cloth always came up white in his time. And also the Ner Maravi also remained for the 24 hours, reminiscent again of what took place in the time of the first Beis HaMikdash. And the Gemara describes other things. Again, the Gemara is in Yuma, and Daf Lamed Tes Amud Aleph, the Lechem Aponim was special, and so forth and so on. So Shimon HaTzadik really was the one who brought together the he was the contact point, the bridge between what took place in the first Beis HaMikdash and the building of the second Beis HaMikdash. And the Gemara tells us that after Shimon HaTzadik was Nifter, so then all of this stopped, because any remnant of what was there in the first Beis HaMikdash now came to an end. And the Gemara even tells us about the Patira of Shimon HaTzadik. It also was different and special. The Gemara again is in Yuma, Daf Kuftez Amud Beis. The Gemara says that the year that Shimon HaTzadik was Nifta, Shimon HaTzadik told them that this is the year that he's going to be Nifta. So they said to him, how do you know this, that this is the year that you're going to be Nifta? So he says like this, he told them like this, B'chol Yom HaKippurim, whenever I went into Kodesh HaKadoshim on Yom Kippur, I used to meet up with a Zokin Echod, and Tosfos brings, and the Mefarshim refers to the Shechina, Lovish Levenim, and he was dressed in white clothes, V'otuf Levenim, and he had on a cover for his head that was white, Nichnas Imi V'yotze Imi. He came into the Kodesh HaKadoshim with me, and he left with me. V'hayoyim, and this time when I went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, v'zdamini zokin echod lovosh shchayrim, v'otuf shchayrim, he now was dressed in black, nichnas imi v'lo yotza imi. And he went in with me, but he did not go out with me. And the Gemara says, achar haregel, and after Yom Kippur, chola shiva yomim, he was sick for 7 days, umeis, and then he died. And therefore we see the caliber, so to say, of Shimon HaTzadik, that min hashamayim, they advised him, they showed him the time that he's going to be Nifta. And the Gemara also says, v'nimnu achiv ha-kehanim midavarech b'shem. In the time of Birchas Kehanim, we know that there are different shemais that are used to refer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, different levels of Kedusha that are attributed to different Shemis that refer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In the time of Shimon HaTzadik, so the Shem that they used was in a much higher level of Kedusha. And after Shimon HaTzadik was Nifta, so they didn't use that Shem anymore. It's difficult for us to know exactly what are the ramifications of all this, but let's just suffice it to say that it's obvious that they saw with the Patira of Shimon HaTzadik that we were going down in the level of Kedusha. In the time of Shimon HaTzadik, so we were holding by a higher level of Kedusha. And in his time, we could use a Shem of Hashem, which was on a higher level. But now that Shimon HaTzadik was Nifta, so we now are not on that level, and therefore we can't use the Shem of Hashem as we used it when he was alive. The influence that we know historically that Shimon HaTzadik had on Alexander was that when he came into Eretz Yisrael, what Alexander wanted after Shimon HaTzadik convinced him that he shouldn't shepherd the people in Eretz Yisrael, he shouldn't wage war against the Eden, but what he did want was, is he wanted that just like till this point we used to pay taxes to the Persian court, now these same taxes should be paid to him. And Shimon HaTzadik convinced him that, he said, we will pay the taxes, we are agreeable to pay the taxes, but in the Shvi'is year, when the people do not work, he asked that we shouldn't pay the taxes, and Alexander was maskim. The Yidden were maskim to serve in his army, to serve with Alexander in Alexander's army, but at the same time they explained that we have certain halachas, we can't participate in the army on Shabbos, And so Alexander freed the Yidden, the Yiddish soldiers, from serving in the army on Shabbos. And this was something that Alexander was more than willing to do. Agav, what we see from over here is that the Yidden didn't put up a fuss to the fact that they would have to pay taxes to Alexander. This wasn't the issue. Right? We are big believers in no taxation without representation, and for this Machmen Agamza Revolutionary War. But in the time of Shimon HaTzadik, that wasn't the issue. Perhaps because they knew that we're going through Golas Yavon, and going through Golas Yavon, if it means that we have to pay taxes to the Yavonim, so be it. We'll pay taxes to the Yavonim. And we have to follow this in everything that we're going to learn. The only time that we put up a fuss was against the Goyim, was only when they made gezeiros against us, b'negeah to keeping the Torah. If they made a gezeirah that we couldn't keep one of the mitzvahs of the Torah, we couldn't learn Torah, something along those lines, then we put up a fuss. Then we created a revolution, we became guerrilla warfare, like they say, we made a whole big to-do. But if it's a question of money, so we paid the money. This is, like you said, this is Golas, we're going through Golas. And if Golas means that we have to pay money, so then we're prepared to do this. We see another example of how Alexander actually had a derech eretz for the Yidden, because in the books it tells us that Alexander, and we're going to talk about this a little bit more as we go on, Alexander developed a very liberal attitude in all of the countries that he conquered. And we will give it to understand as follows. Alexander was, as you mentioned, on this campaign to conquer the world. And as he conquered different countries, he got the people in the different countries to join him in his army and to continue on. He understood that in order to get the people to join together with him, so he had to treat them well. He had to make it so that these people would not be his servants. He had to make it so that they would have a level of freedom. If they would have freedom under him, even if it meant taxes, as you mentioned, but basically they were free people, so then they would be willing to serve together with him. One of the major issues that he met with as he went from country to country was that every country was full of Avodah Zarah. Every country had at least one Avodah Zarah that they believed in. Every country had a different Avodah Zarah. And in the countries, and in a lot of the countries, there were many different Avodah Zarahs. And as we explained before, the Avodah Zarahs weren't, it wasn't so much a religious issue as much as it was a cultural issue. The Avodah Zarah was more typified the culture of the country. It was part of what the country was all about. As you mentioned, like you have today in America. Today in America there's this freedom of religion, but the culture of the country is designed after the Christian culture. The different holidays that come up, if you know, we're doing when things open, when things close, when people go on vacation, when they don't go on vacation, the culture that's found in the country is basically a Christian culture, and that had a lot to do with the religions were found in the different country. If you are a proud citizen of this and this country, so then you pledged allegiance to the patron Avodah Zarah, so to say, of that country. That was part of being a citizen of that country. And Alexander knew this, and he knew that if he is going to do battle with the people in the different countries that he went to conquer and try to draw them away from the different Avodah Zarahs and force them to accept his Avodah Zarah, or force them to accept the philosophy of the Greeks, So he knew that that would create opposition. That means you're taking away the personality of the different people that you're conquering. So he allowed everybody to have their own. And we're going to learn that this became a kunz, that even in the future generations, the Romans learned to do the same thing. And America even learned to do the same thing. Like, live and let live. And over there, live and let live in America, it means freedom of religion, that everybody could do what they want, could keep any religion that they want, and everybody is free. Well, the way Alexander put it down was that everybody should be in everybody else's religion. So freedom of religion means that all the religions are going to make one big mush out of all of the religions, and we're going to bring them all together. So when he came, and one example was when he came into Bavel, and there in Bavel he found the Avodah Zarah of Baal, and the Avodah Zarah of Baal, the building of the Avodah Zarah was ruined, it was destroyed. So he ordered his soldiers to clear away the ruins and to start building back up the house of the Avodah Zarah. Again, this is all part of his plan of being good to everybody that he went to. If he would show to the people of Babel that he was helping them with their Avodah Zarah, so that would be a way of convincing them to join with him. All the people agreed. The only one who didn't agree were the Yidden. And not because we didn't believe in freedom of religion, but we would have no part in the reconstruction of a base Avodah Zarah. And because of that, they were threatened with punishment. If you're a member of the army, and this is the job of the army, so they were threatened with punishment. But Alexander let them go, because once he realized that the Negea to us, this is a chelek of our emuna, the fact that we can't get involved in the building up of the Avodah Zarah, so Oibazoi, he pardoned us. And if anything, he had respect for the fact that we were willing to put ourselves in a bad position, sacrifice our lives even, to go into Chepa with somebody, with Alexander, because of our principles. And if anything, it created a certain level of respect, Benegea, to Alexander. We're going to continue just to explain a little bit more this campaign that Alexander had as he went through the world. And once again, he didn't try to impose Greek culture on the conquered people, but if anything, he took on, he was willing to accept everything that he ran into. So what happens when you go into the Far East and the Near East and the Far East? So now we're talking about Persia, and we're also talking about Egypt, Mitzrayim. So when you're talking about Egypt and when you're talking about Persia, Oriental countries, so there they were still seeped into the inyanim of the Avodah Zarah, and not only were they involved deeply in the Avodah Zarah, but they were still deeply involved in Kishuv. So here we have Alexander, who's coming with Greek philosophy and Greek culture, which is, as you mentioned, is if anything, it's a stira to Avodah Zarah, and it was also, did they refuse to accept the union of Kishuv, of witchcraft, and here he's meeting together with them. So he said, listen, what's the problem? He's willing to accept this also. And he was prepared when he came into Egypt, which was the first place that he met from the countries of the Near East, or the Middle East. So he was ready to be influenced by the culture and the spirit of the Middle East also. So what did he do? He came into Mitzrayim and he brought sacrifices. He brought korbanos to the gods of the Egyptians. And when they all said to him that he is so successful, look what he's able to do. Unbelievable, the ability that Alexander has. So Alexander says, you know, you're right, I must be a bit of an Avodah Zarah myself also. And so to the Egyptians, Alexander made himself into an Avodah Zarah. He declared himself the son of one of the Avodah Zarahs of the Egyptians, And he came up with this idea, something that was picked up by others in a little bit later time, that he really didn't have a father that was a bus of Adam, mother a bus of Adam, but his father actually came from the Avodah Zarah. It was a Holy Spirit. His father was a Holy Spirit. And I guess it worked for him, so maybe it could work a second time also. Once again, Alexander created a very liberal atmosphere into all of the places that he went. He tried to merge all the different beliefs and all the different practices into one culture. He called it a Greco-oriented civilization. He tried to get, and as we're going to learn, when he went into Persia, he tried to get people to intermarry. People, the Europeans, should marry the Orientals. As I mentioned to you once before, that was the best way in those times, especially to create fusion between different types of people. So the way to do this was to marry people one from the other. So he tried to get all of his soldiers and his officers, when they marched into the lands of the Far East and the Middle East, that they should marry the women that were found in these different countries. Now, we are going to... another thing that he did was, he founded new cities. He created new cities. And in these new cities that he created, he brought a sprinkling of one and a sprinkling of another, all different people, because in an old city, I guess it's hard to turn the city upside down. So he created new cities. And in these new cities, he brought little bits of people from all different areas to set up these cities. Now, one of the cities that he created, and this was a city that was found not far from Eretz Yisrael, was the city of Alexandria. And the reason they called it Alexandria is because it goes down in history with his name of Alexander the Great. He called it Alexandria. And Alexandria was a beautiful city. It was a port city. So the fact that it was a port city made it so that it was accessible to people traveling from many different areas. Everybody could come with their boats, and they can come into the city of Alexandria. And into the city, they could bring the wares that came, what they had to sell, what they wanted to buy, could all come together in the city of Alexandria. He could bring into the city Yidden, because it wasn't that far from Eretz Yisrael, right near Eretz Yisrael. And the truth of the matter is that after the Churban of the first Beis HaMikdash, Yidden went to Mitzrayim. So he just encouraged more Yidden to go to settle in the city of Alexandria. He encouraged Greeks to come to the city of Alexandria and to settle there. And this is very important. The city of Alexandria, in general Mitzrayim, and specifically the city of Alexandria, becomes a pivotal, important city in our history for the next 500 years. We have to remember this name, because it's going to become a very, very important when we're going to discuss Christianity. It had a lot to do with the development of Christianity. And now, let's try to see what the city of Alexandria looked like. New city. People coming from all over. So, and they're all coming together, and we have a liberal attitude in this city, right? That's the first thing. You gotta have a little bit liberal attitude. So you had on the corner of First Street, you have standing an Egyptian base of Avodah Zarah, and over there they're playing the flutes, and the snakes are coming up into the air, and there they're doing all kinds of kishuv, different kinds of things, and there's witchcraft going on, and that's on First Street. And then on Second Street, you're going to have a Greek temple, and over there you're going to have libraries, and you're going to have all kinds of scientists getting together, and they're doing their work, and they're getting involved in all different types of philosophical kinds of things that's going on Second Street. And then when you get to Third Street, so Rachmun al-Islan over there, you have the Eden that are there, and we're going to learn more about what the Eden actually developed in Egypt at the time, but there you have Eden that come into Alexandria, and they're doing their kind of a thing in Alexandria. One of the things that he did, by the way, to encourage the Yidden to come into Alexandria was that he gave them an autonomous local Jewish government, which means that they're able to rule themselves. Now this is something that that's always very enticing for us, and this is was used many times in the future in the history to get Yidden to move into a country or into a city. If you come here into this city, then all of your issues could be resolved by your own Bezdin. So this is a wonderful thing. So Alexander told him that if you move into Alexandria, if you move into Egypt, so there you're going to be able to set up your own Bezdin, and you're going to be able to be ruled by your own Bezdin. So that encouraged the Yidden to come. And so once again, you had the Yidden that came into Alexandria, and they have... We come in with our emuna and with our zachin and with our beliefs. All of this comes together in Egypt and specifically in the city of Alexandria. So let's try to sit back a little bit and just get a feeling of what was going on in the city. It must have been a Levitical place, and it was a Levitical place. And you could well imagine that with all of the different factions that you had in the city, and it's not like you have in America where you have Chinatown and Koreatown and an Italian section and a Persian section, that's not like that. Here it was more than that. The sections that they had were marked with each one's religion. And each one's religion was booming out from that different neighborhood, and they were it was dictated to the fact that a very liberal atmosphere. And we got to accept it all. We have to take it all. Not everybody could do their own thing. Everybody should do what everybody else is doing. That was the atmosphere that was found in that time. So you could well imagine that this was not a place for a good Jewish boy to be found. Right, because with the influence that came from the Egyptians with their Avodah Zarah and with their Kishuv, and on top of that, if you were able to withstand that, so then you came down to places where you had the Greek libraries, scientific research, technological advances. Those were the second thing. Mitten from the ganze Zach, you have some Yidl that's sitting there trying to daven mincha. So you can well imagine that that all of this was not so simple for Yidden to be able to live there and to be emeser mekayme Torah mitzvahs. And again, we're going to get back to this because this is a key issue: the city of Alexandria. As we mentioned, Alexander himself, he goes down as Gaius Adam Tashbilen, the perfect Balgaiva. And because he is a perfect Balgaiva, so Ibazoi, he doesn't live a full life. At the age of 33, Alexander died. He died because he went into Persia, deep into Persia, and tried to capture, to take over all of Persia. Persia is not an easy country to go through. It's a mountainous country, and this caused his soldiers many difficulties. Also, the fact that his soldiers were very tired. They were far from home, and they were getting tired. They wanted to go home already. Ultimately, Alexander himself became... His gaiva made it so that he wasn't that involved that much in seeing to it that his soldiers should be kept happy. He was much more interested that he should be kept happy. So between the fact that his army was little by little starting to fall apart, and the terrain that he was going through, and the fact that the Persians didn't look at him as liberators. The countries that the Persians controlled those countries were happy to go over with Alexander in order to throw off the yoke of the Persians. But once he got into Persia, coming into Persia, the Persians themselves did not see them, did not see the Greeks as liberators, and so therefore the Alexander himself was killed in one of his battles, and his campaign in order to conquer the world came to a stop. Now, what happened was, this didn't happen overnight, but basically what happened was, is that there wasn't any more somebody with the same stature as Alexander that was able to become the emperor of this whole empire. There was no way. There was nobody that could keep it all together. And so ultimately, the empire was divided up into three different parts. There was part that remained by Greece, and then there was a part that went over to Babel and to Syria, and then there's another part that went over, that was around the area of Egypt, into what we have as Mitzrayim. So again, if you look on the map, you see that if you want to get from Syria to Egypt, so you have to go through Eretz Yisrael. So Eretz Yisrael was kind of in the middle, and and at times it was under the control of the emperor that controlled Syria, and then it moved over to the one who was in control of Egypt and took Eretz Yisrael under its wing. And we'll see that it went back and forth from time to time. It went back and forth. We are going to study now that the time when it was under the control of the Egyptians, and Eretz Yisrael was under the control of the Egyptians. And once again, if we're talking about when it was under the control of the Egyptians, Eretz Yisrael was under the control of the Egyptians, and we're also talking about this great Yishuv of Yidden that was in Mitzrayim, a very successful Yishuv that was in Mitzrayim. If Eretz Yisrael was now ruled by the same ruler that was ruling over Egypt, so it was easy for the people to travel back and forth from Egypt to Eretz Yisrael. Okay, it's a very practical way. If Eretz Yisrael would be under the Syrian ruler, so the people living in Egypt wouldn't necessarily be able to travel to Eretz Yisrael. It's like a different country. But if Egypt is under the rule, if Egypt and Eretz Yisrael are both controlled by the same emperor, so therefore it would be easy for the people to travel back and forth from Egypt to Eretz Yisrael. Now the Gemara in Sukkah tells us about how gewaldig it was in Mitzrayim. The Gemara tells us they had a Beis HaKnesses in Mitzrayim, huge Beis HaKnesses in Mitzrayim. And Agantz Sugya has to do with this Beis HaKnesses, because it was such a big Beis HaKnesses that when the Chazan stood in front of the shul and made a bracha, so you couldn't hear him in the back of the shul. Not because people were talking, but you couldn't hear him in the back of the shul, because it was such a big shul that you couldn't hear him in the back of the shul. So they had somebody standing in the middle of the shul, and he used to wave a flag. So when he came to the end of the bracha, so the man standing in the middle, he would hear that they got to the end of the bracha, and he'd pick up the flag into the air, so everybody should be able to say Amen. Nu, so you hear from over here, Grace the Chiddush, that you can answer Amen to a bracha, even though you don't hear it. But if the bracha is said out loud, others hear it, and it is the time of the end of the bracha, so you can answer Amen on the bracha. And the beauty of this Beis HaKnesses was the Gevaldik, beautiful, beautiful Beis HaKnesses. Not only that, it was set up in such a way that it should be conducive for people to move to Mitzrayim. Because the Gemara says that they had different sections in the Beis HaKnesses, and the different sections were roped off for the different trades that you have in Mitzrayim. In other words, if you come to Mitzrayim, let's say you're going to come to Mitzrayim and you're going to be a silversmith. So you're going to come to Mitzrayim. So how do you do this? Where do you go? What do you do? So there was a section that was made for the silversmith. So you knew right away that was the section I should go to. I'm going to daven now in that section where the silversmiths were, and they're going to help me to get established in Mitzrayim. So it was set up in such a way to encourage people to settle in Mitzrayim, and because if they come here, they'll be able to have parnasa. Their fellow Yidden would help them in parnasa. It's like there's a man that lives here in the city, also does business all over the world. So I ask him, when you go into a strange city, so what do you do? Where do you go? What do you do when you get into a strange city? He says, the first thing I do is I go into the shul. I go into the local shul, find out, I look up in the phone book where there is a synagogue, look for an Orthodox synagogue, I walk into the shul, and then once I get into the shul, he says, half the battle is done. I meet other Yidden, and then I ask them, you know, where can I go and sell? He has different type of a product that he sells. Where can I go? And they're always helpful. They're looking to help me, because one Yid is always eager to help another Yid. So they made it so that in Mitzrayim, they should be able to, Yidden should be willing to come there, because it would be easier for them to be able to set up business over there. But now we're going to go back, and we're going to realize that Yidden are encouraged to live in Mitzrayim, in Alexandria specifically, in Mitzrayim in general. We're under one emperor, it's like one country, so it's easy to go from Eretz Yisrael to Mitzrayim. At the same time, the Yidden that were living in Mitzrayim were constantly being influenced by the Greek culture and the Egyptian culture that was found in Mitzrayim. And little by little, the level of, I guess, call it Yira Shamayim, call it Yiddishkeit, call it Shmiras Teiru Mitzvahs, was constantly falling. Was falling further and further. The source of the tsaris that we're going to meet up with when we talk about the Misyavnim, the people that were influenced by the Yevonim, the source of this comes out of Egypt. Because Egypt, Mitzrayim, became a seat of Greek culture. Now understand, Egypt is not Greece, right? But the Greek Empire was divided up into three different pieces. And one of those pieces of the Greek Empire was centered in Egypt. And it was in Egypt at that time where the biggest effort was put into developing Greek culture. So you have in Mitzrayim the development of Greek culture. You have the immorality that comes out of the Avodah Zarah and the Kishuv that was developed because of the Egyptian culture, and then the Near East culture. All of this is in Mitzrayim. As we mentioned, Dardan, then Faran Yidden, there are Jews also. And these Jews are traveling, they're now are found not only in Egypt, but they're also traveling to Eretz Yisrael back and forth. Until the Yidden living in Egypt were being influenced by the Greek culture, and they were carrying that influence back into Eretz Yisrael. And this was creating a very negative influence, not only on the Yidden that were found in Egypt, but also as a result was creating a very negative influence on the Yidden living in Eretz Yisrael also. We have to explain exactly what this means. See, our way of understanding things is that we understand that there's such a thing as a person who, Rachman al-Islam, doesn't keep Torah mitzvahs. He's missing Yira Shamayim, I guess we would call it, Reformed Jew. A Reformed Jew says, listen, this is not for me, and that, I don't have to do this. Sometimes even we look at these people as just not being serious. Like, they don't take their religion serious. It's not important, it's not from the major things. But we have to understand that we're talking about a level of people that are on a much higher level of the people that are found today in the world. And the influence that came out of Eretz Yisrael and came out of the Chachamim was a tremendous influence. And it wasn't something that a typical person would be able to do, an intelligent person, after being exposed to the Chachmei Yisrael, to Tanoim, to G'dayle Yisrael, especially in that time, in that caliber. You just couldn't shake it upon, you just couldn't shake it away and say, I just don't believe in this. You just can't do that. The influence was too strong. What did they do? What they did is they tried to bring together what they learned as an example from our Nevi'im. They tried to explain the Svarim of Yecheskel, Yirmiyahu, and Yeshayahu using Greek philosophical ideas. So to them it was like this. The philosophy of the Greeks to them was true. What Torah min Hashemayim is also true. So how do you do this? How could both of these things be true if they're two different things? So they put an effort into weaving the two together, explaining the Sifrei Tanakh using Greek philosophical understanding. Now, can you imagine the Churban that comes out of this? They're taking a Goyish cup with Goyish understandings and Goyish havonis and Goyish of philosophies, and they're using this Rachmona Litzlan to be able to explain psukim in the Torah, to be able to explain psukim in the Nevi'im and Ksuvim, so that to themselves, well, this quieted their conscience. It's not the pshat is that they're going away from the Torah. No, they're enhancing the Torah. They're explaining the Torah. And they're explaining the Torah using these principles that the Greeks have developed, which of course is true, because after all, it comes from Plato and it comes from Aristotle and Kiyuduaz and the Chreisa Chachomim, and everybody admitted they were Chreisa Chachom. So they took their philosophies and Rachman Lassan, they took it in order to translate, to explain different sukkim in the Torah. We're going to take it a little bit further than that. They, using Greek philosophy, so they went on to explain that things that are found in the Torah are allegorical. Vice versa main, this means azai. And I'm not positive that this is included in this, but we'll use this as an example. Avraham Avinu was not a mensch. He was a concept. We got that? All right, he was a concept. And Sari Menu was a concept. In other words, it's not the pshat is that a person has to wear tefillin, Rachmanu Litzlan, but a person has to have the spirit of tefillin. That's what you have to do. The purpose of wearing tefillin is in order to have it is what the Torah wants, the purity of the mind. Let's put it like that. The idea of wearing tefillin is to have to purify a person's mind. So the Torah, Rachman Aslan, Chas V'Shalom, doesn't want tefillin. The Torah wants purity of mind. So we're now going to go a step ahead. And the tefillin represents, I'm not good at this because I've never studied Greek philosophy, but let's just say, tefillin represents the concepts that you write on a parchment and then you put on your head. Well, that's just that's the muscle that's being used. But really, really, in the tiefkeit, what does it mean? It means to take the ideas that are found in the parashas and put them in your mind. It doesn't mean in a box with parashas, but what do you need it for? It's talking about, it means it in a spiritual way, in an image, so, and as long as you achieve the same result, so that's all that you need. So that's how they explained away Rachman al-Islam, the mitzvah of tefillin, and explained away the mitzvah of tzitzis, and they explained away the stories that there were in the Torah, with what we learned from Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu was a moshul, and it's a moshul for this, and Sarimain was a moshul for that. In Echmeis was all different things that they had in the Torah that they were able to, that they took all of the cultures that they had from the Greeks, and they tried, Rahman al-San, to incorporate it into the Torah, to make it so that by the time they were finished, and you have to understand, this doesn't happen overnight. This is something that that, you know, takes time, years and years, in order to be able to masver everything. So this is what the Yevanim and the Misyavnim that were living in Egypt at that time, this was they were working on. Now you have to understand that the how all this comes together. If you take Greek philosophy and Rahman al-Islam explain away the mitzvahs of the Torah, that's not what the Torah means, that you can't do this, you can't do that, it means something else altogether, then you open yourself up to the immorality which comes from the Egyptians. You understand? Well, now it all comes together, because the Egyptians, the people that came from the Far East, so they were coming with their low life type of existence that was involved with all different ways of living their life on a very low pain, immorality, an immoral type of a life. And if the only thing that stands in your way is the mitzvahs of the Torah, so you explain that away with the philosophy that you pick up from the Greeks, so where are you? So you're left in Mitzrayim, far away from the Beis HaMikdash, and you've already destroyed Rahman al-Islam. What's the husk from the Torah you're able to destroy? And you can do it in such a way that you consider yourself to be an outstanding Jew. Well, say, you're keeping the Torah, even better than keeping the Torah. You're keeping the Torah, and you're keeping what the Greeks taught, and you're keeping what the Egyptians taught. You know, it's like, you know, they tell over the story about somebody that was so frum that they even bow down to the Avodah Zarah, because, you know, they say that's what it is. Now here's a person who said that convinced themselves that they were able to bring everything together, and so by doing this, the culture that developed in Alexandria at that time and in Egypt in general turned into a very, very low moral, irreligious, let's call it, level. And these are the people that were constantly traveling back and forth to Eretz Yisrael. Now, the emperor of Egypt at that time was a man whose name was Ptolemy II, and he was taka deep into Greek culture. Not only was he into deep Greek culture, but he was into culture in general. He was into education, into chachma. As he mentioned, he brought together the chachmas of all of the from all the different ends of the world. He brought him into Mitzrayim and developed huge libraries. And in these libraries, he brought together all the wisdom of the Greeks and all the wisdoms of the Far East and the Middle East. And he was missing one. The one that he was missing was the books that could come from the Eden. And the reason that he had a problem with this was because it was written in Lashon Kodesh. And if it's written in Lashon Kodesh, he couldn't understand it. And he wanted to incorporate these ancient books full of great wisdom. He wanted to incorporate this into his library also. So what did he do? He sent to the Kohen Gadol, because again, as we mentioned before, the Kohen Gadol was considered to be the head, the leader of the people. He sent to the Kohen Gadol, and he asked the Kohen Gadol to send him 70 of the greatest scholars, of the greatest sages who knew Greek, to come to Mitzrayim. The Kohen Gadol had no reason why he wanted these people. He brought them to Mitzrayim, and when they got there, again, they had no reason what they were doing there. He divided them up into 70 different rooms, and then he told them that it is your job to translate the Torah from Lashon Kodesh into Greek. And this is the Gemara Megillah. The Gemara talks about the Targum, how the Torah was translated into Greek. And the Gemara talks about the godliness of these Chachamim. There were different psukim that were found in the Torah that they were afraid to translate exactly the way they should be translated. For instance, Bereshis Bara Elokim, they were afraid to translate the simple translation of Bereishis Bara Elokim, because they would think, Rachman L'Tzlan, that Bereishis created HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So therefore they translated in a different way, and they all were mechavin, even though they were all found in different rooms, they all were mechavin, they all came together to translate the Torah in exactly the same way. So they walked out of there, and they all had the same translation. And now the Greeks had the Torah translated into Greece. The Yidden living in Greece, in Egypt at that time, and in Greece at that time, the Yidden living under the Greeks were Malei Simcha, because they felt that this would now show to the Greeks the great Chachma that we have. And this became a day, Agamta Yontif, the 8th of Tevis, Ches B'Tevis, was a Gvaldi Yontif Benegea to the Eden living in Egypt, because now the Goyim are going to see what we're all about. Now they'll have their Echeretz for us. Now they'll realize the Gvaldige Maila that we have with our Torah, because now they'll be able to read it. So the day Ches B'Tevis became a Gvaldige Yontif for them. Also, they were afraid, living in Mitzrayim, that their children and grandchildren, little by little, were not able to read the Torah, because they were so assimilated that they were drawn away from learning the Torah in Lashon Kodesh. And they figured, what's going to be with them? Oh, so now you can always read it in Greece, in Greek, right? It's almost like you'd say, people are afraid that the day Rachman L'Tzlan Chalila is going to come, you can't learn the Gemara the way the Gemara is written, so we'll translate it into English, so you should always be able to learn the Gemara. Well, that's admitting defeat. That's not what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to see to it that people should always be able to learn the Torah the way the Torah is written. And think about it. We're 2,000 years in Golis, and we're still learning the Torah the way the Torah is written, right? It's written in Lashon Kodesh. We're reading it in Lashon Kodesh after 2,000 years of Golis. And yet these people that were living in Greece at that time, they felt that in a very short amount of time, nobody living in Egypt is going to be able to read the Torah. So for them it was a gevaldig simcha. They were the simcha, and they praved the yontif. And the chachamim that were living in Eretz Yisrael at that time, they praved avelus. The Gemara says that anches b'tevis yar de chayshech l'aylam. And it lay, and it went on for 3 days. Ches B'Tevis, Tes B'Tevis, Asara B'Tevis. Those 3 days. And the tainus that we have on Asara B'Tevis is a tainus that we fast to commemorate the translation of the Torah into Yevanis. So look at the different attitudes. They thought it was a Meri D'Gezach for them. The Chachamim saw that this is the beginning of the Churban. The translation of the Torah into Greek is the beginning of the Churban of the Second Beis Hamikdash. We know Asara B'Tevis is when they surrounded the city. That's the beginning of the Churban of the Beis. Shavuos B'Tamuz, when they broke through the city. Tisha B'Av is when they ultimately destroyed the Beis Hamikdash. So you have to know now that just like the surrounding of the city, that's like the Hagdamah of destroying the city. Well, there's a Hagdamah to the Hagdamah. And the Hagdamah to the Hagdamah is translating the Torah into Yevanis, which took place on Ches B'Tevis. And the reason for this is because the Chachamim saw that this is going to be, I guess what you'd say, the beginning of the end. Now, every person is going to be able to take the Torah, and everybody's going to become a Chacham. Everybody is going to be able to take the Torah and say, yeah, this stems with what we learned from the Greeks, because we'll explain away the Torah like this, and we'll, Rachman Olsam, we'll explain away the Torah like that using the Chochmah. We'll make it so that the Greeks, what the Greeks have taught us, the Greek philosophy and what we're learning in the Torah, yeah, it all comes together. It's all the same thing, and it's you know, you can have it all. You know, you can eat kosher, mitreif, alskemes, and tzazamen, and it's all going to work out gewaldig. So this is Yor the Chayshech La'ilam, because now it was a time that we officially so to say, were able to bring the Greek teachings and the learnings of the Greeks into the Torah, Rahman al-Islam. Now, understand, again, there's a tremendous liberal spirit in Mitzrayim, right? The whole spirit in the air is a liberal spirit, right? Everybody's living with everybody else, and everybody's happy with everybody else, and everybody's patching everybody else on their back, and you know, this is what's going on over here, right? That's the ruach of this man. Well, you know, so in this liberal spirit, so now the Torah is translated into Greek, and the Torah, it's my Torah, it's your Torah, it's my Torah, and the Chochmah of the Greeks comes together with the Chochmah of this, everything comes out, Chapacha, everything becomes Eins, and Rabbi Isai, this is the beginning of Churban. Okay, we'll stop over here, next time you're at Hashem, we'll take it a little bit further.